The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Without going into the great details about the technical side of this, 5G produces signals that could interfere with some key aircraft system, radio altimeters, also called radar altimeters. And that system is tied into other things in the aircraft that are absolutely essential for landing in low visibility. There are very specific requirements for low visibility landings. And one of those requirements is that you have to have a very reliable altitude above the ground. And while some altimeters can actually operate in 5G environment, others can't.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, it's good to be with you today. You know, I always trying to keep you up to speed on the latest technology and how it can affect you and ultimately your health. Last week when I was away from the mic, I had a guest host, Ed Marcy, and I want to thank him again for sitting in. He talked to a friend of mine who is he flies for a major airline. He's also an instructor, former military guy. And he talked to him about how 5G rollout was impacting airlines. And he shared a couple stories, you know, early on how it affected. They're having real instrument problems at one point when cell phones first came into play. And he got on the microphone and got onto the speakers and said, hey, if you want to land safely, everybody shut off your phones. And they did. Today, the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, and wireless carriers, you know, AT&T, Verizon, they've all reached an agreement about how to proceed with the addition of, well, we're looking at about 500 5G towers around airports. And pilots have been very concerned about the signals from those towers interfering with their radio altimeters, as you heard. And, you know, an altimeter, if you're not familiar, it's an instrument that tells the pilot how high they are off the ground. And, you know, they use that, of course, in bad weather. And the FAA and the carriers believe that they've reached the right way to do this without compromising safety. But along with that, people are concerned about the health. Are there health risks to 5G? And I've been speaking with Dr. Martin Paul for a while. I mean, for years now, as we knew 5G was coming, I spoke to him about the potential dangers of this. And as I saw this report about airlines, and as we know now that this is rolling out in a big time way, I thought it'd be important to visit him again. I heard a story about one guy there's a video of a guy who's walking around a city, right, with a meter that allegedly detects electromagnetic radiation. And I'll get clarity from this from my guest in a moment here, but he pointed at it at a 5G tower, and the needle on the meter pegged at levels well above what they claimed were safe for humans. But these concerns are being dismissed by the government and the media. I think it was PolitiFacts. They had a headline that read that 5G health concerns unfounded, not linked to aviation issues. CNET had a headline saying, is 5G making you sick? Probably not. So if there were such concerns, it would be a huge blow to the cellular technology industry. But, you know, maybe there are concerns. Back in 2019, World Health Organization said that they didn't think that there are problems with it. But the International Agency for Research on Cancer, they said something different. They said, oh, hold on, there could be problems with it. And they put it in the category of drugs like progestin, those contraceptives. Another study found that there's a clear link between 5G and biological occurrences like cancer, but also on reproductive and metabolic and neurologic and microbiologic systems. So here to clear this up for you, and I'll be more than willing to take your calls if you've got concerns, if you've seen something, if you work in the industry, feel free to pull up a chair. It's an honor to have with me today, though, Professor Emeritus of Biochemistry and Basic Medical Sciences at Washington State University, Dr. Martin Paul. Doctor, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Always a delight. Can you start by just giving us a basic explanation, if you can, of what 5G is and how it works?
Well, 5G is a system which is designed to carry gigantic amounts of information. And all wireless communication, with the exception of FM radio, carries the information by having modulating pulses. that modulate an underlying frequency. And 5G has vast numbers of modulating pulses, and we have good evidence, there are 13 reviews published on this, that pulsation makes these EMFs, these electromagnetic fields, much, much more biologically active and therefore much more dangerous. And therefore, we have great concerns about the effects of 5G. And we already have huge amounts of evidence on precursors, on other EMFs that don't pulse as much as 5G that are causing major biological effects already, completely apart from 5G. So I think what I'm going to talk about, if we have an opportunity to talk,
Doctor,
about
the floor is yours. So please.
Okay. What I want to talk about is, first of all, how EMFs produce biological effects, what their properties are that cause these biological effects, and then talk about specific effects that are produced and why there's so many concerns about them. So the first thing is that electronically generated EMFs, and all the EMFs we're talking about, mm-hmm. are generated by electrical circuits. Electronically generated EMFs are coherent. And what that means is that they are put out at a particular frequency in a particular direction. So EMFs are directional. They are vectors that go in a particular direction. They are, and they're put out at a particular polarity and phase. And I'm not going to talk about the physics of all of this, but
right now,
what the situation is because of this coherence, these electronically generated EMFs produce quite strong electric forces and also quite strong time-varying magnetic forces. And they differ from most natural EMFs, which are incoherent. So most natural EMFs are made up of different photons going in different directions with different phases, polarities, and frequencies. So they're incoherent. They produce, at best, tiny, tiny little forces. And it's the forces, then, that produce the biological effects. And it's also the electric forces that are essential for wireless communication.
Yeah.
So the same thing that's required for wireless communication is the thing that is producing the biological effects, the effects in our bodies.
Yeah, and Doctor, I remember previous conversations that we've had, and
yeah.
I was always just struck by the fact that you believe that we're seeing a rise, and we're seeing this. I mean, the statistics play out. They're very frightening, to be honest with you, in anxiety and depression. We're seeing a rise today in anxiety, depression, sleep problems. Many people are struggling with that right now. There is memory mm-hmm. problems. And if I remember our conversation when you were on last, you think 5G may be contributing to that problem as well. Is that true? I mean, can that affect one's anxiety levels and depression, memory, sleep?
Look, all those things and many others. So I published a paper on neuropsychiatric effects of EMFs. This was long before anybody was talking about 5G. And we know that the EMFs that we've been exposed to cause, I can't sleep, I'm tired all the time, I'm depressed, I can't concentrate, my memory doesn't work, I'm anxious. All these things that you just mentioned, and a number of others. I mean, there are other things that are produced as well, like tinnitus, for example. These things we know are caused by EMFs that we've been exposed to for years. There have been 11 different review articles that have been published on those effects being produced by, in some cases by cell phone radiation, in some cases by cell phone tower radiation, by Wi-Fi, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the things that we are exposed to cause these things now, before 5G ever came in, before 4G even never came in. The problem with the newer systems is they pulse much higher in order to carry much more information, and that makes them much more biologically active, and they produce these effects then much more seriously. And that's the key issue. And it's not just the brain-related effects that I'm concerned about. And let me just say, I'm also concerned about neurodegeneration. There is, certainly in animal studies, we know you get massive neurodegeneration from these EMFs. So that the and there was a beautiful study published by Elsweffi et al. In 2008 that showed that cell phone tower radiation, just 2 hours a day at very low intensity, caused massive neurodegeneration in rats. 34% of the cells in the brains of the rats died in 4 weeks. Think about that. 4 weeks.
Whoa.
Wow, exactly. I mean, so, so, you know, and let me just say, these are not just observations in isolation, but we know how these are produced. You know, there's a lot of information about the mechanisms that produce these things.
So what's the deal with that? Let me just jump on that for a moment. If this is so nefarious and so bad for one's health, you know, for years there have been scattered studies that have indicated, look, your cell phone can lead to elevated cancer. They argue there could be, you know, tumors of the brain and, you know, glioblastomas and all these different things that can take pancreatic cancer, I think was another one, which is one of the deadliest of these malignancies. If cell phones can do that, does 5G amplify that? Do you think we're going to see a real spike in cancer as a result of this as well? Maybe we're seeing it today.
I think we will see. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about 5G, and before I answer your question.
Sure, no, go right ahead.
So 5G involves the use of millimeter waves, and which is a higher frequency than we've had for our exposures previously. And the reason the higher frequency is used is because you can pulse a higher frequency much more, you know, in order to carry more information. So, what's true is in millimeter waves that the electrical parts of the EMFs are absorbed in the outer parts of the body. And that is, and so the industry says, well, it cannot produce any penetrating effects. But in fact, we know that's not true. And the penetrating effects are produced not by the electrical parts of the EMFs, but by the time-varying magnetic parts of the EMFs. And those are very, very highly penetrating, and they produce effects as well. So what kind of effects are we going to see in from 5G with cancer? You're going to find much stronger effects right near the surface of the body. Like, for instance, we may well have, you know, 100% of the people coming down with the kind of deadly skin cancers that you get from melanomas, for example. And so you may get a different pattern than is occurring. But that doesn't mean, again, that doesn't mean you can't get any penetrating effects, because the magnetic fields can also penetrate and produce effects. So I think we're going to get both. And I would not at all be surprised if we have, you know, pretty close to 100% incidence of deadly melanomas coming from 5G. So because they occur in the skin and they're more absorbed. But that doesn't mean you're not also going to get penetrating cancers as well. And let me just say, we know that these EMFs cause DNA damage. They cause single strand and double strand breaks and oxidized bases in the DNA. We know that occurs, and those DNA effects, of course, have roles in causing cancer. So it's not just that we're seeing cancers; it's also that we're seeing the things that we know cause cancers, and they are clearly caused by EMF exposures.
My guest today is Dr. Martin Paul. We're talking about 5G. It's rolling out in greater frequency. You're being exposed to greater intensity and just taking a look at how safe it is. You know, there's been some concerns regarding aviation, but what about your health? I have a 5G phone. How am I being, you know, affected by it? How are you being affected by it? How are your loved ones? Let's go to the phones. We'll take a few calls. If you want to join me, I only have the doctor maybe 10 minutes at the most. So if you want to get in, I'll give you the number. It's 888-914-9149. We'll go first to Portland, Maine. Joanne is listening to us there. Hi, Joanne. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
And to you, Dr. Paul, thank you so much for being with Drew again. I always learn so much from you. And I have been beating this drum for many years. I'm a former emergency department nurse. I've absorbed enough radiation in the trauma room to last a lifetime.
Wow.
I am on a lake in southwest Maine, very rural area. I have three cell phone towers across the lake. It's a mile long. One is quite large. The other is smaller. My question is, what is the distance? Because I also have our power company was pushing smart meters. I rejected that, and I pay $150 more each year because I won't let them put a smart meter on my wall that is the outside wall of my bedroom. I refuse to have that because I believe, I mean, when you think of how many people are getting brain cancer, you know, they're holding the phone up to the ear. I have no data to prove it, but it just seems very likely.
Yeah, if I can comment on that. One of the things about the cancer causation is there are a number of studies which have shown that cancer is produced predominantly, not entirely, but predominantly on the side, this is brain cancer I'm talking about specifically, predominantly on the side of the head that people use their cell phones, not on the other side. Mm. Now, what does that tell you? It tells you the cell phones are causing this. And there's good reason to think that cordless phones also cause it. So, you know, so the industry, of course, denies everything I have to say, but the evidence is there. Now, what was you had another question though? I guess about the cell phone towers or what? Yeah.
I'm a mile across yeah. from three cell phone towers, one large, two small. I wondered what the distance, the reach is in terms of what I'd be receiving once the town goes to 5G. At a mile distance.
Yeah, there haven't been studies on 5G yet, but I think that you know, if it's a straight line of sight, it's different than if there are things in the way. And
no, it's a straight line, unobstructed.
Let me just say that. You know, there are a number of epidemiological studies that have been done on people living near cell phone towers.
Mm-hmm.
And what's been found is, you know, in the original studies, which were 2G studies, people living within 150 feet of a cell phone tower had higher incidences of these things that we were talking about.
Wow.
And then when 3G came in, it was more like 300 feet. Now we're getting to well over 400 feet, and you know, and so it's hard to know because it's hard to know what, you know, what the effects of the of it's, because it's not just the distance, it's the frequencies of the pulsations that are critical in terms of biological effects, and that's where, you know, that's where I have very high level concerns, and of course what they want to do eventually is have 5G towers all over the place within within 100, 150 feet of almost everything.
Yeah.
I've said before that I think this is absolutely insane to do this, and I think it is insane to put any of these things out without biological safety testing. And that is what they are doing, and they are doing it based on claims they can't do anything, and we know those claims are false.
Yeah.
Can I bring something else into this?
Sure.
And this has to do with the environmental impacts. There was a beautiful study done in Australia in a highly protected area around a mountain called Mount Nardi, N-A-R-D-I, which was a highly protected area where species were not supposed to be impacted by anything. And there was, you know, essentially no chemical exposure in that whole region. The telecom industry persuaded them, well, we can put these towers in and they won't have any effect. So they put in 3G towers, and lo and behold, they affected large numbers of animals. And then later on put in 4G tower. What happened was they not only affected large numbers of species, but there were many of these species that became locally extinct. They just disappeared.
Wow.
That include insects, it include amphibia, includes birds and mammals. And so we know there are massive, and again, this is a highly protected area. These things are not caused by chemical exposures. They are caused by EMFs. And they're absolutely massive effects. And let me just say one other thing. Millimeter waves, which are used in 5G, were approved in the U.S. Patent Office for two patents, one in the year 2000 and the other in the following year, 2001, for use as insecticides. They are so effective in killing insects that they can just wipe them out. I mean, it's just like that. And these are not the highly pulsed EMFs of 5G. These are just non-pulsed millimeter waves. So, it's bizarre what is going on here. Absolutely bizarre.
Joanne, thank you for your call. It's always good to hear from you. Maggie, open your microphone. I know you were concerned about Bluetooth and earbuds. I'll let you ask the doctor your question. Go right ahead.
Well, yeah, I see people walking around all the time these days with those AirPods and Bluetooth, you know, earpieces. And there's just something in me that always looks at that and goes, oh, no way. That looks like that's cooking their brain. Like, does that have an effect as well?
It does. I'm not sure whether Bluetooth is better or worse than just using a cell phone. It yeah. may be either one. I don't know. But, yes, I do have concerns about it. If you're going to use, you can use earbuds that are basically work off of air, off of an air passage. Yeah. And those are much, much safer than either one of those, than Bluetooth or just using your cell phones.
Wi-Fi, is there a danger? I've got a router. I'm sitting close to one where I'm located in our homes. They're all over the place. We're being bombarded by Wi-Fi signals. That's very different than 5G, though, right? But does it have a similar impact on one's health?
Yes, it does. And again, we have more animal studies than human studies, but we do have human studies. And, for example, there were a couple of studies on Wi-Fi.
Right.
Where it was shown that the electrical activity in the human brain, this is measured by EEGs, is impacted by Wi-Fi.
Wow.
And so these are experimental studies. These are not epidemiological studies. Hmm. So we know that the causation is established by the experimentation. Right. And so there are effects, and they're similar to what you see from these other EMFs. Right.
Let's do this. Let's grab a couple of calls. I know how quickly time goes here. Wayne is listening in Chicago. Wayne, thanks for your patience. You're on the air with Dr. Martin Paul.
Doctor, thank you for all this information. But my question is, what can we do about it? I see ads for things like EMF bracelets and pendants and other such things that are supposed to protect us from 5G and other electromagnetic fields. Are these effective, or what can we do?
Okay, so let me just say, you can get shielding that will help protect you. But that shielding then has to be between you and the source of the radiation. There are shielding that involves clothing that has little metallic microfibers in it. Many of them are silver microfibers, and they are useful. And I believe the way they work is by disrupting the coherence of the EMFs. Because when the EMFs bounce off these little silver wires, you know, they go in all kinds of different directions, and so the coherence is largely destroyed, and you get very little effect as a consequence of that. There are other ways to, now the kinds of devices you're talking about may work. I don't know for certain that they work, but I do know that there is a plausible mechanism by which they work. Having said that, I'm not sure whether I should spend the time on the program to try to explain it.
Well, I'll tell you what, Doctor. Let me take a short pause. It's a great question, Wayne. I'm grateful for it. When we come back, I'll take final questions and some final thoughts. I only have about 30 minutes on the other side of this this break here, and we've got a lot to get into, too. I want to talk about cyber attacks, another great threat that looms. But Dr. Martin Paul is here. We're taking a look at 5G if you're just joining us. If you missed any of this or you say, man, I wish I could share that with someone, well, you can. Maggie will have it up about an hour after we're off the air. Just go to my podcast, look for The Drew Mariani Show, and share this with others. When I come back, I'll take your final calls, okay? Stay with me. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Get informed and get connected. It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, delighted to give you a look at life you're not going to find anywhere else. If you're new to the program, set this station. All right. And if you are listening online, I'm on every afternoon. You can always tap into the... you can tap into our archives, our podcasts, and listen and share the information you hear here. As always, I try to be honest, moral, and objective on the issues that I bring to you. And today I'm looking at 5G. We're all moving into this new era. New cell phones that are capable of 5G are out. With these new systems, you're able to download entire movies in seconds rather than half an hour or more. Your video calls aren't going to be so jittery. It all sounds great, right? There's a lot of benefits to it. I'm all about technology. I love it. I think it's fantastic. But there's one question that we should all consider. What's it going to cost your health? And the reason I'm asking that is because I've got a guest today. His name is Dr. Martin Paul, who's ringing the bell, warning people about the dangers of 5G. There was a report from a group at the University of California at Berkeley that shows that the majority of studies that have been done on cell phone radiation, both from the phones themselves as well as from the towers, they have negative effects on people, including inducing brain cancer. We've talked about the other things that we're now seeing, the rise of anxiety, depression, and so many neurological degeneration and problems. This is a multi-billion dollar industry, so you can understand the opposition to it. But what's the truth? My guest today, Dr. Martin Paul, and you're more than welcome to join me too. If you want to join us, feel free to dial in. I only have him for a few more minutes. Doctor, before I go back to the phones, I sit here and I money drives a lot of things, and we see this, and I wonder what it will take to put into place safeguards and protect the American people and really the citizens of the world from this danger, if it is as dangerous and as imminent as you say it is.
I mean, I actually believe it's much more dangerous than I said it was.
Wow.
Let me just make it clear on
I
that.
I love your honesty.
Having said that, I also want to say I've made predictions about how fast this will develop, and I believe that some of the predictions I've made, in fact, are wrong. And I'm not sure I can explain to you why they're wrong, but I believe there is an explanation. That doesn't mean that we're not looking at extraordinarily serious situation. And I don't see really any solution at this point, because the political system has been subsumed. The regulatory agencies have all been corrupted. And we know that the safety guidelines are just completely bogus. They're completely meaningless. So, including the FCC ones and the ICNIRP ones and the EU ones and the UK ones and the Health Canada ones, et cetera, they're all bogus. And we're in extraordinarily deep trouble.
Yeah.
And, So I don't, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's grab a few calls. I only have a couple minutes. 888-914-9149. Kathy in Rockville, Maryland. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I'm just concerned because I work in front of a computer all day. And also on weekends, I like to use my iPad. I don't really know how I can protect myself. Is there a way I can protect myself?
You know, one thing you can do is not use Wi-Fi. And you can use your computer wired. You can even use your iPad wired, although the problem with iPads, as I understand it, is that you cannot turn off the Wi-Fi in the iPad, even if you're not using it. You have to use an adapter in order to use a wired connection on an iPad, but you can do that. The same is true of a number of different laptop computers. You have to use an adapter in order to use a wired connection. So most of the radiation you're getting is from the Wi-Fi, both from the Wi-Fi from the computer or iPad and the Wi-Fi from your modem. Okay, so that's one way to do it. Now, you know, other kinds of things you can also use. You can use shielding for. You can put shielding over your computer that you can just look through, for example. Sort of plastic shielding. So there are ways of lowering exposures. And it depends on how sensitive you are, really. You know, some people are very sensitive.
All right. Let me leave it at that. I'll sneak another call in here, though, and we'll take a break. A lot of people want to get in with you, Doctor. I'll have to bring you back, too. Mm-hmm. Reno, Nevada. Good afternoon, Zoe.
Hello. I have a quick question. We just moved into a new house, and the previous owners had told me that there is some EMF. The laundry room with the breaker box shares a wall with my kid's bedroom. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little concerned. She had something plugged into the wall, and she used to wear, she wore one of those pendants. But, like, is there something, should I do something to limit it? And what would that be?
Okay, so it's on the other side of the wall from where your daughter is. Is that what I'm getting?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they share a wall. So, like, the breaker box is in the wall that shares with their bedroom.
But Zoe, yeah. is there an EMF device in the wall or something other than just the breaker box?
No, she, in a different wall in the bedroom, the previous owner had like a EMF limiting device plugged in.
Okay.
To one of the outlets, but is that effective? I'm not sure.
All right, thanks, Zoe. Let me look.
This is a little bit complicated, okay? I think what you're probably dealing with is a lot of what's called dirty electricity, and you got at a breaker box, you've got a lot of, you know, electric lines coming in and going out, right? And so those lines can have a lot of what's called dirty electricity in those lines, and when you do that, they irradiate just like a regular antenna and expose you to that radiation. And so it is possible to use shielding to protect yourself from those kinds of things. The cheapest kind of thing you can do is use graphite paint, which is a black paint that basically scatters these EMFs all around and disrupts the coherence of them. Right. And of course, when you do that, you don't want to look at a black wall, so you can cover it up with another paint. You can actually add other pigments to your graphite paint, so it's not quite so black. But anyway, it's so these can be purchased from a number of places, and you use that as a paint, and then just cover it with other paints that you want to look at. I think that's the simplest and cheapest way to do it.
Gotcha. All right. Well, Doctor, I've got a hold of there. We have a ton of people who want to get in, but I'm up against the clock. I want to thank you for being with us. It's always fun to talk to you. I'll bring you back because there's so much to look at. I mean, I think more evidence will come to the fore. If people want to track you down or get caught up on some of the writings on this issue, what's the best way to connect?
Well, you can find my papers on if you go into Google Scholar and put my name and electromagnetic. You'll find a number of papers, and a number of those can be downloaded full text at no cost, so you can get them right off of
Well, the name is Dr. Martin Paul, P-A-L-L. Check it out. I'll be right back. Relevant Radio runs on horsepower, your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep your station running. Join in with thousands of other listeners who have given their unused vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
Your Life Connected, The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, it is good to be back. As I said a moment ago, if you missed any of the conversation, maybe you tuned in late, you said, oh gosh, I wish I could have heard that whole conversation. Go to relevantradio.com, go to my podcast, download it, okay? Share it with others. You can stream it live. You can share the link. If you're new to my broadcast, tell others about it and join me every afternoon. I begin on the East Coast at 3. I run to 6 on the West Coast, noon to 3, 2 to 5 in the Central Time Zone. And you can do the math around the world. We've got some great, great people who listen in everywhere from South Africa to Britain to over in Asia. So it's good to have you as part of the family. I really am glad to be here. And one of the things I'll call you to is greater prayer. We see a lot of conflict in the world right now. 2 weeks ago, and I want to bring you up to speaking on one other issue that could be a possibility depending on how things advance. I don't think we'll necessarily see bombs fly, but you may be brought, this country may be brought to its knees by something a little different. 2 weeks ago, the Ukrainian government officials there, they saw a message pop up on their computer screens. Now check this out, and I'm going to quote it. It says, quote, Ukrainian, all your personal data was uploaded to the public network. All data on the computer is destroyed. It is impossible to restore it. All information about you has become public. Be afraid and expect the worst. This is for your past, present, and future. End of quote. That message hit the offices of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the Cabinet of Ministers, and Security Defense Councils. Of course, this was done by the Russians. It was an intimidation tactic. But that was just the beginning of the possibilities. Last year, Klaus Schwab, he's the founder of the World Economic Forum. He's a, if you're not familiar with that, that's a group of very high-flying business and government leaders that meet every year in Davos, Switzerland. You know what he predicted? And I'm not here to scare you. I just want you to see where we are right now. Again, I call you to pray. He predicted a cyber attack that will bring the entire world to a screeching halt. He said, this is him, not me. He called it a cyber pandemic. And he says this cyber pandemic will make COVID-19 look like a small disturbance in comparison. Now, you know how businesses have been crippled. You know how people were in lockdown. You know how the economies were destroyed. You know how hospitals were overrun. He says this will make COVID look like just a small disturbance. Now, given the fact that he's got deep connections to people who run companies like Microsoft and Google and Facebook and other big companies, you almost have to wonder if he already knows something's about to happen. Maybe it's looming in the not-too-distant future. What happens? You know, whatever the facts are, and I don't want to talk too much here. If you were to lose your access to your computer, your local government, the country, it would bring the country to a complete halt. I mean, communication, transportation, banking, finances, hospitals, even how you heat or cool your home. In some cases, how you flush your toilet or get your water. We've become so dependent on these devices, you know, this technology that we can't really function without them right now. It'll cripple a majority of this nation. So I wouldn't be able to broadcast without them, that's for sure. So who would want to do something like that? I don't know. How would it come about? There's a lot of scenarios potentially, but unfortunately that possibility does exist. I've invited Dr. Peter Pry to join me today. We'll touch the surface of this today. We'll drill deeper into it in the future. He's executive director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security, and he served on the Congressional EMP Commission as chief of staff. He's been a longtime contributor to this program and a very gifted author of these topics interest you, I'll tell you what, check out his books. He's written several on EMPs and other threats that loom. Dr. Pryde, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I don't want to scare people. You and I have spoken about all sorts of things, from EMPs to what would happen if, for some reason, our power grid went down. When I saw this story about Klaus Schwab, he doesn't say anything about EMPs, but he did talk about a cyber attack. I don't know whether it be China, whether it be Russia, Iran, North Korea, some other adversary, or who knows. I thought of you, and my first and foremost question is, how vulnerable is the U.S. to such an attack? Because I am sure that they're aware that other nations could potentially be working on this type of attack and technology.
Well, the world has actually already seen similar attacks to that that he has described, by North Korea. How many years ago was it? Just a couple of years ago, North Korea attacked over 100 nations with a ransomware attack, basically, attacking banks. And, we never know what the resolution is. Did the countries, and then the ransomware, it went away. The attack went away. It didn't last a long time. It was, it was maybe a day. All right. But it locked things up and it demonstrated terrible vulnerabilities to over, I think, 80 or 100 nations in the world. And how many of them paid the ransom? Maybe none of them did. Maybe North Korea is just doing it to demonstrate that it could raise Hob. All right. Mm-hmm. But, so if North Korea can do it, I mean, China and Russia have much more sophisticated cyber attack capabilities. And the field evolves very quickly. I'm sure that these nations are hard at work on the cyber equivalent of a nuclear weapon. All right. And by that, what I mean, not something that's going to cause an explosion, but something that's very hard to make, and North Korea appeared to have it, just a couple of years ago, what you might call a universal bug. All right. Because a cyber weapon, one of the impediments to being able to hit all the nations and critical infrastructures at the time is they all use different systems, different computer languages, different software, different hardware. And so making a one size fits all is quite a challenge. It's not something some teenager in their cellar can do, which is how a lot of people think about cyber warfare, that some kid is going to be able to shut down the whole electric grid in a country.
Right.
No, this is a Manhattan style project as well. That's probably going to cost billions of dollars and have hundreds of cyber warriors, cyber scientists working on it to come up with something like that. And it's because it's a new kind of a weapon, there's a lot of uncertainty about how well it would it work. For example, you may recall our Stuxnet worm. We've mm-hmm. made cyber attacks ourselves to try to ward off existential threats. The Israelis in the United States, it was Silicon Valley, actually, I think, that came up with the Stuxnet worm. And the Israelis, the role they probably played. And we know about this. It should have been kept deeply classified, but President Obama basically told the New York Times all about it. So we made the Stuxnet worm. Yeah, it puts us in the crosshairs. That's another story. I'll make it part of this story.
Sure.
So Silicon Valley made the Stuxnet worm. The Israelis provided. Now, how do we get it? Because the idea was, how do we slow down or stop Iran's nuclear weapons program? And, their underground facility at Natanz is where a lot of their centrifuges are. They're spinning, the weapons-grade uranium. And it's not connected to the Internet. So how do you get in there? Well, the Israelis are great at that sort of thing. And they obviously got some willing Iranian scientist to bring a memory stick down there so that he could input the Stuxnet worm into their facility. And it did cause disruption. But it was only temporary. It caused the centrifuges to spin in a way they shouldn't. And at the same time was sending the operators a signal that everything was okay. And so the idea was to try to destroy the centrifuges, basically make themselves spin themselves to death and burn out their bearings. They did succeed in destroying about, I think, 10% or 20% of the centrifuges. But the engineers caught on about what was going on and shut the whole thing down. So it wasn't all that successful. This is an example of, it's a great idea, but it may not work 100% perfectly because it's a kind of a weapon that has never been used before. That's why I think the current military doctrine that they've got includes throwing the kitchen sink at us, you know, when they go after electric grids. You know, they'll start with cyber and they'll use their best cyber weapons and see if that works to shut down the grid, and is it going to be shut down permanently? But at the same time, use physical sabotage, have specialized teams going out there and shooting up transformers and stuff. Not a large number of people. It would take, a very small number of people. In my book, Blackout Warfare, I calculate that, if you had an army of like 30 people, running around shooting up transformers, that would probably be enough to take down the whole country.
Wow.
Then there are non-nuclear EMP weapons, and the same guys who are using kinetic attacks, in other words, using rocket-propelled grenade launchers to blow up transformers, they could have an EMP, non-nuclear EMP weapon in their van, and hit the whole site. So you'll take out a specific thing like a transformer, but at the same time you can burn up all the SCADAs and also do more damage to the transformer, with that non-nuclear EMP weapon. And then, of course, the ultimate thing, and if that doesn't work, the ultimate thing would be the nuclear EMP attack, which will certainly work for sure.
Yeah.
But any one of these things could do it, and the combination of them would be irresistible. And that's why they plan that way, because they cyber is such a new weapon. Maybe it could do the trick all by its own, but you don't want to, if you're going to fight World War III, you want to win for sure. And so you're going to throw the kitchen sink in, at least at this point, in terms of the technological development of cyber weapons.
Yeah, you don't want to eradicate, you don't want to have radiation and destruction everywhere. It'd be a lot easier to bring a nation to its knees through some sort of cyber warfare than dropping a nuclear bomb. For those who don't understand what would happen, you've made the case, and I was always struck by this. I hope you're wrong on this number. You said that if an EMP went off and our power grid went out, or let's say there was a cyber attack, 90% of our country would die due to dysentery and hospitals being overrun and lack of refrigeration and heat. Share that number.
Yeah.
I might be misspeaking, but again, 90%, I forget what the time frame was on something like that happening.
A year. That was the EMP Commission estimate. Everybody is always attributing it to me, because I'm sort of the spokesman for the commission, all right? Mm-hmm. They'll say, Peter Pry said, well, it's actually an EMP Commission assessment. And, we look very hard at that. And initially we thought it would be 2/3 of the population, because we were thinking, what kind of a population did the United States have, say around 1880, before the electric grid was invented, before we built our modern critical infrastructure, and the population of the country was actually less than 2/3 of what it is today. I mean, people don't realize how modern technology has enabled us to increase by exponentially the size of our population. At the time of the American Civil War, the population of the United States was 30 million people, all right? Well, and it wasn't until the electronic, I think we didn't even hit 100 million in 1900. I think it was after World War I we got up to 100 million. And then with the advent of the electric grids and modern technologies that enabled us to grow a lot more food and pump water to the cities, with all the electricity that was available, and that's necessary, that's what kills most of the people in our calculations, is the lack of food and water. You immediately lose drinking water when an EMP happens, and the food starts spoiling. We only have enough food to feed people for 30 days, and it would begin to spoil as soon as the grid goes down. And then, of course, there's anarchy. We know from hurricanes that, you know, about 24 hours after the lights go out, after people miss their third meal, you know, the thin veneer of society that holds us all together starts rapidly deteriorating into anarchy. And and then there are other things, of course, also that would happen with the EMP that probably wouldn't happen with a cyber attack, like natural gas lines exploding and airplanes falling out of the sky and things like that.
Dams
nuclear
opening
reactors
up
going to Fukushima. Yeah. But if you can just take down the electric grid and cyber could do that, that would be sufficient to kill, you know, a majority of the population.
Well, doctor, let me do this. I want to pause you on that because I have less than a minute. If people want to learn more or get up to speed on some of these very quickly, what would you recommend?
The best book is the one I published in 2020 called The Power and the Light. And that would make you an expert on the history of EMP and the physics and all the rest.
Yep.
My most recent book is Blackout Warfare. Those two books together, it'll tell you what the bad guys plan to do, how they do it.
Dr. Pryor, I'll have to have you back when we can spend an hour because we've only scratched the surface, as I said. Thank you for your time. I'm Drew Mariani. Until we talk again, may God bless you.